We've been in a series for the past few weeks called Abide. We've been talking about what it means to abide in Christ, kind of starting our summer off by focusing in on that. I want to start off today with a question, all right? I want you to think about what I'm going to ask you. When was the last time that you believed for something miraculous and big in your life? Think about it. When was the last time that you had to have faith in God for something to happen that without Him, it was going to be impossible to happen? When was the last time that you had to believe for something really, really big? And if God didn't come through, it'd be a big deal if He didn't come through. Think about it. Take some time. When was the last time you believed in God for something big? When was the last time you had to put your faith into action in a big way? Now, maybe for some of you, as you're sitting there, you think, I don't know if I've ever believed for something big from God. Or maybe you can think of a moment and you can think of a time when, yeah, I had to believe really big and God came through for me. Or maybe you're even sitting there and you're thinking, I did believe God for something, but man, I don't know if He came through the way that I would have hoped that He came through. Today, what I want to do is I want to wrap up this Abide series and I want to talk to you about this idea of believing big for things that God's going to do in your life, activating your faith in a whole new way. So I want to start off with this. There was a time last November, last year, when I had to practice my faith in a way that was big. Now, you might laugh when you hear about what it was, but this really was a situation where I really believed that I activated my faith in kind of a unique way. So I realized last year that I needed to get a new vehicle. I drove a Toyota Corolla, gold. Some of you remember it. Sickest car ever. Totally awesome. Sick roof. It's falling apart. It runs. It's dented. It used to be my wife's car. She crashed into somebody, so the hood's all messed up. It's just a wonderful, wonderful machine. However, I realized that with moving into a house, with all the stuff we do around here, I needed a different vehicle that could accommodate what I was doing in life. Now, you might think, it's just a vehicle. It's not. This is a big deal for me. Because as much of a money person as I am, as much of a saver as I am, I had not put away money for a new vehicle. I wasn't planning on buying something new, but I felt like, yeah, I need to get a new car. So I didn't really have any money saved for it, but I had this little tiny amount in savings that wasn't designated for a car, but it was a little amount that was all I could spend. And this measly amount would not get me pretty much anything that would be worth having. Okay? So I started thinking about, what am I going to get? I want to get a truck. I need to get a truck. I need to be able to haul things around. I need to be able to put my lawnmower in it so when I need to get it serviced, I can do that. I need to have a truck so that when I'm hauling stuff for FSM, I don't have to always ask to borrow things. I need to get a truck. God, how are you going to provide a truck for me? How in the world are you going to do this? So I started looking on Craigslist, and that was really fun because the first time I looked on Craigslist, I found this amazing brand new truck, and this person was going to give it away for free. And I thought, this is just incredible. So I called the person. Oh, by the way, it was a scam. Careful on Craigslist. There's all kinds of scams I've discovered. So I kept looking. I went to some dealerships. I was looking around, and there was no way that I was going to be able to buy a truck in the price range with this amount of money that I had saved up. So I started praying. I just said, God, I want you to do a miracle. You're going to have to do a miracle in this. That's the only way that this is going to work out, is if you come through in a big way, in a kind of miraculous sort of way. I'm driving down the street, and I pass this truck dealership that I've passed 1,000 times, and this thought hit me, hey, go in there and just talk with one of the salespeople and see what happens. So I said, okay. So I drive, I pull into this dealership, and I get out, and I find the first salesperson I can find. He's an older guy, really nice, super well-dressed, cowboy boots. And I go up to him, and I say, sir, you're probably going to laugh at me, and that's totally fine. But here's the deal. I'm looking for a truck. I have this much money to spend. I can't spend any more than that. This is what I need to buy a truck. Do you have anything? Now, this guy could have laughed at me, and he could have just skirted me along. He could have just ignored me. He was actually a really kind guy, and he said, you know, you're dreaming. There's no way you're going to find anything that runs for that amount of money. I said, I figured that, no big deal, no problem. He said, but let me take your number, and if something by a miracle would happen to come up, I'll let you know. And I said, okay. So I gave him my number, and I leave. 3 hours later, guess what happened? Yeah, 3 hours later, I get a call from this guy. I forget the guy's name. Chuck. We'll call him Chuck. That's a good name. Chuck calls me. Chuck the cowboy boot guy. Chuck the cowboy booted salesman. He calls me. He says, Zach, I just got a truck in, and you're not going to believe this, but I think we might be able to do something with you. I think we might be able to work out a deal with you. And I'm thinking, okay, this is probably somewhat of a scam as well. What are they going to do? How much are they going to take me for? So I go down there. And I look at it, and I'm looking at this vehicle, and this is pretty nice. I mean, it runs really well. Body's in good condition. I mean, it's, you know, a little older, but it runs nice. Interior's good. It's clean. There's no issues with the engine. I'm thinking, what's the issue here? And he says, he goes on to tell me, he says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go talk to your wife, and then I want you to call me, and I want you to tell me how much you're willing to spend, how much you're able to spend, and I'm going to see if I can work you out a deal. I said, okay. Went and talked with Ariel. We said, well, we're going to offer this measly amount of money that's kind of a joke, and that's what it's going to be. If they take it, great. If not, then it's not. I called the guy. I said, here's how much we can give. He said, it's a deal. What? I go to pick the truck up. We go to do a test drive, and in the meantime, I'd looked this truck up on, Blue Book, and just to get an idea of what's the real value of this. And we're driving, and I said, "How are you guys selling me this truck at this price? How are you? There's something not right here, because what I'm paying, this truck is actually worth double." And he said, "You know what? God's blessed me, and sometimes I'm able to bless other people." Yeah. When you have faith, when you believe in God, when you trust in God, He can do the miraculous, miraculous things in your life. That truck is the truck that I drive now. It's worth double, maybe a little over double of what I paid for it. But it all started because I believed with big faith that God was going to do something miraculous for me. And He came through, and He did it. That's what I want to talk to you about today. I want to talk about how to activate some faith inside of us to believe for big things. With abide, we've talked about three different aspects of abiding in Jesus. We talked about dependence. We talked about how abiding is full dependence on Jesus. We talked about how abiding is full surrender. Last week, we talked about how when we abide, it produces great fruit in our lives. Today, I want to talk about the benefit of abiding. And here's where it comes. We've been in John 15 for the past number of weeks, and we've gone through verse by verse pretty much. And John 15, 7, Jesus is talking about abiding in me. He's talking about how He's the vine. He's the true vine. We talked about that. He's talking about remain in me, I remain in you. And here's what He says in John 15, 7. This is really cool. He says this, if you remain in me and my words remain in you, this is the key. Ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you. Say, ask whatever you wish. Say it again with some conviction. Ask whatever you wish. Ask whatever you wish, and it will be given to you. Do you know what Jesus is saying right here? He's saying this. He's saying, you can ask, and you can believe for big things when you're abiding in me. Hey, I give you permission that if you're abiding in me, I give you permission to ask me for big things in your life. I give you permission to believe big, that I'm going to come through for you in a big way, and I'm going to do it. I give you permission to do that. And that's not the only place that He talks about that. There's a number of other places in John where it's recorded that Jesus says this. In John 14, 13, He says it again, whatever you ask in my name, I will do. In John 16, 23, He says, ask and you will receive that your joy may be full. And other writers in the New Testament record this idea that, hey, if we're abiding in Jesus, then we can ask and believe in big faith, and he's going to come through for us. And in James writes about this. James 4:2, he says, you don't have because you don't ask. And if any of you lacks wisdom, ask and it will be given to you. So there's this idea in all throughout the New Testament, from the words of Jesus, from the words of the other writers, that if you believe in faith and ask Jesus, that he's going to come through for you. He's going to provide things that you never even thought possible. As we've been going through this series, I've been looking out and I've just kind of been assessing who's here. And I would say that probably for the most part, I would say that most of you are probably abiding in Jesus in some form. And we talked last week about how when we're growing in Christ, how there's different stages to growth. And there's some folks who are just newer to their faith, and they're just starting out, and they're just learning what it means to follow Jesus. And then there's some of you who have been following him for a long time, and so you're a little more mature and down that road. But no matter where you're at, I would say that most students here are abiding in some kind of a way in Christ. And I would ask you this, though. You're abiding, yes, but are you believing for big things? Are you using and activating your faith in the way that Jesus challenges you to? And my response would be today, if you are, keep it up. But if you're not, you need to. You need to, because Jesus tells you to. He says, if you abide in me, ask. Ask whatever you will in my name, and it will be done for you. This is code for Jesus saying, have really big faith. It's code for have really, really big faith. I give you permission to do that. Matthew recorded this in his gospel. He recorded when Jesus was talking about faith. And he said this, that Jesus said this, if you have faith as big as a mustard seed, you can say to mountains, move. Jesus said, with faith, nothing will be impossible for you if you have faith. Even a little tiny bit of faith. The writer in Hebrews talks about how faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we can't see. And so I like to think of it this way, that faith is where you can't see it, but you can see it. Faith is, you can't see it, but you can see it. You can't see it with your physical eyes, but you can see it because you believe for it. And you know that it's going to happen. You know that God's going to come through for you. Now, when I think about faith, there's a lot of, every character in the Bible expressed faith in some pretty incredible way for the most part. There's so many examples of this. But there's one example that I think about, and it's the story of Elijah. And it's the story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal. And some of you know the story, but if you don't, I'm going to catch you up on it. And for those of you who know it, this will be a good refresher. So in 1 Kings 18, it tells the story of the prophet Elijah and his encounter with these prophets of Baal. And here's the synopsis of the story. Essentially, the Israelites are under the rule of King Ahab and Jezebel, and they were evil rulers. God was not pleased with them, and they were turning the hearts of the people to a false god. And the false god's name was Baal. And Elijah didn't like this, because Elijah was a prophet after God. And Elijah comes to the king one day, and they have a disagreement. They have an encounter, and he says, "Listen, why don't we do this? Why don't we challenge and see who's the real God? Let's see if Baal's the real God, or let's see if my God's the real God. And here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to set up a challenge. You gather all the prophets of Baal that you can possibly find, and we're going to set up two sacrifices. We're going to set up an altar here. We're going to set up an altar here. And I'm even going to be the one responsible for setting it all up. I'll cut the bull up. I'm going to cut up a bull. I'm going to place it on the altar on both of them. And then what we're going to do is both of us, I'm going to call out to my God, and you have the prophets of Baal call out to their God. And whoever answers by fire, that'll prove whose God is real." And Ahab says, "Let's do it. Let's do it." So here they go. Story goes that the prophets of Baal, there was 450 of them. They gather around this altar and they start screaming. They start crying. They start dancing. They start doing all kinds of crazy things, trying to call upon Baal, crying out to him. It even says that they get so desperate that they start cutting themselves, trying to draw blood in order to get Baal to respond to them. That's pretty extreme. And this whole time, they're crying out and nothing's happening. No response. Nothing. And so Elijah, he's kind of a witty, sort of sarcastic kind of joker. And so while this is going on, he's sarcastically taunting them. And he's saying things like, you know what? Maybe your God can't hear you. Maybe he's sleeping. Maybe you need to call a little bit louder. So they scream louder. Then he says, you know what? Maybe he's on a vacation and he's far off. And maybe you need to call even a little more louder or do something a little more extreme so you can get his attention. And so they're doing this. They're doing this. Finally, they get to the point where they're exhausted. They're exhausted. And then Elijah comes and he casually walks over to the altar. And he doesn't say this, but by his actions, he says this. He says, you know what? I have such big faith in my God. I'm going to do one better. So he gets some water, and he starts dumping water on this altar. He starts dumping buckets and buckets and buckets of water all over this altar, and it says that it runs down and that it collected a pool of water around it. He's dousing this thing, okay? And then he steps back, and he doesn't cry out in a loud voice. He doesn't dance around and flail. He doesn't cut himself. He just asks and talks to God from a heart that has true, real, strong faith. And he says, God, show yourself to these people. Show that you are the true God. And this is the coolest thing. I love how it's written, how it says it. It says that the fire came down so intense that it gobbled up the sacrifice and the altar in one swoop. It was like God was so blessed by the faith of Elijah that he said, I'm going to come through for you in a way that's going to be unforgettable. It says that the fire came down, consumed the sacrifice. Now, I'm assuming that here's what that means. When it says consume the sacrifice, that doesn't mean that a little fire started and it just kind of burned. No, what that means is that he incinerated this thing and turned it into like ash instantly. He consumed this thing. And it said this, that all the water was instantly like liquidated. It was gone. That's intense. That is intense, okay? And God proved himself faithful. And it says this, that right when that happened, the people in Israel whose hearts were divided, they were torn between, do I trust in God? Do I follow Baal? He said that at that moment, their hearts turned to him. And they believed that is the one true God. All started because Elijah had faith and believed that God was going to do something big in his life. Here's what impresses me about Elijah's faith in this situation. What impresses me is, first off, that he activates his faith in real time. And here's what I mean by that. This situation could have gone a number of different ways. And if Elijah had any doubt in his heart that God was going to come through, he could have set this challenge up in a completely different way. And I was thinking about how he could have done it. And I was thinking that he could have given it like a week's time. He could have said, hey, let's take a week and let's call out to God and let's just see if he responds, and given himself kind of an out, you know, because by day three of the week, if nothing was happening, he could have just ran away and hid and nobody would have been the wiser. But he activates his faith in real time so that if God doesn't come through, he's going to look like a total idiot. He's going to look very, very silly. He's going to be really embarrassed. He activates his faith in real time. He has such faith that God's going to come through that he puts himself on the line. What also impresses me about this was Elijah's motivation for having this faith. His faith in God wasn't so that he would look good. It wasn't so that he would personally have fame or any great benefit. It really came down to this. It says that He activated his faith so strong because he wanted the people of Israel to know who the one true God was. He wanted them to know that God was real, and so he activated his faith in such a way because he wanted them to believe. He wanted them to believe so much. His faith was motivated by a desire for God to be glorified and for God to get all the glory. Are you exercising your faith in a big way in your life? Are you believing for big things? Are you believing that God can do big things in your life? Are you taking Jesus up on his promise? And if you're not, then I want to talk with you about some areas in your life that you can start believing big. Some of those areas might be small, some of them might be big, but I want to challenge you in some areas to start getting your faith activated in a new way. When it comes to faith, you guys, we can believe for big things. You know, I would put my truck situation, we'll just call that a big faith thing, right? But there's a lot of areas in our life where maybe they're just not big things like that, but we need to still have faith for them. I thought about this week. A lot of times we talk about having a little bit of faith for big things, but sometimes we forget that we can have big faith for the little things. Are you having faith? Here's one area. Are you having faith that God is going to provide for your needs? Are you having faith that God's going to provide for your needs? Now, for most of you, you're not providing for yourself necessarily. You're still with your parents. Your parents are providing for you. But there's always something that we feel that we need, okay? And whether it's a legitimate need or it's just kind of a selfish want, I don't know the difference. Only you can know that. But are you trusting that God's going to provide for your needs? Are you trusting that God's going to provide for you financially? Some of you are seniors going off to college. And some of you, the issue of going to college is a big, big deal because maybe there's not provision for you to go to college. Maybe your parents aren't able to help you out. Maybe there's not resources. Are you believing big that God can provide that money for you? Are you believing that he can come through for you? Or have you kind of just resolved that, you know what, he's probably not going to provide. It's okay. I'll get money in different kinds of ways. Are you having faith that God's going to come through for you in a big way? This week, we had to take Judah in to a specialist doctor for something that's going on inside of his stomach. It's nothing bad. We realized what it was. He's got a hernia. Little kids sometimes get those. So he has a little hernia right in his abdomen. And it doesn't hurt him at all. He doesn't even notice it's there. And it's one of those things that he'll be fine. But when he gets older, if it's not taken care of, it can kind of maybe create some issues. So we went into the specialist, and he looked at him, and he's like, you know what? Yeah, he's got a little tiny hernia in his belly, but he also might have a little tiny hernia in his groin area. And he's like, and he doesn't even notice it. He doesn't feel it at all. But when he gets older, it could cause some issues for him. So we probably need to do surgery on it. It'd probably be wise to do surgery. So I'm thinking, oh, of course, okay, surgery, yeah. And I said, okay, well, how much is this going to cost? You know, how much is this going to cost? And so I sat down with the lady, and I said, okay, well, first off, how much is it going to cost to fix the little tiny hernia that's happening right here in the belly button? She's like, well, that'll cost $937. Okay, You know, we have a health savings account. We can deal with that. But then she goes on, and I said, well, here's what the doctor told me. The doctor told me that he may have a hernia in his groin area, but he said that when he goes to fix this one, he can put a little camera in there to look down there and see if there's another hernia in there. So how much is that going to cost to look to see? She's like, oh, well, to look to see, that's going to cost you $947 just to look and see. And if he finds nothing, it's $947. If he finds there's another hernia, well, that'll cost $1,200 to get that one fixed. Wow, this is kind of adding up. That doesn't include anesthesia. That doesn't include the hospital thing. So I'm thinking, okay, that's a lot of money. And I love my son. I love him. I do. That's a lot of money. So we walked away from there, and I was thinking, God, if I couldn't put my faith in you and trust in you that you could provide, I'd be totally lost. I mean, I'd be stressed out and panicked and frustrated. But I walked away from that, and Ariel and I said, you know what? God will provide. We have big faith that God's going to provide for that need. Is it stressful? Yeah, a little bit, but you know what? He's going to provide. He's going to come through. We've had situations over in our lives where we've had to activate big faith, and God comes through every time. There's no reason to think he won't come through now. Are you trusting in God in that way? You probably don't have a little son who's got a hernia, okay? And if you do, we should probably talk, you know, and hang out, do a little mentorship there. But what is your hernia situation? Okay, what is that in your life? Something that's a need that you just need to have God come through for you on. What is that? Are you believing that God can come through for you? Here's one. Are you having faith that God can increase your favor? Are you having faith that God can increase your favor? That's an interesting concept, isn't it? Favor. You know, there's some people that have the favor of God on their life. And that wherever they go, no matter what they do, the hand of God just seems to follow them. They just seem to succeed where others don't succeed. They seem to do well where others may not do well. That's the favor of God. It talks about, in Genesis, we talk about Joseph. And you know the story of Joseph, how his brother, you know, he had the coat of many colors, you know, that Joseph. He gets thrown in the pit, you know, goes to Egypt, all that kind of thing. And what's this reoccurring theme all throughout Joseph's life? No matter what terrible circumstance he was in, he had the favor of God on his life. So even when he was in jail for accused rape, he becomes the head prison guard. Even though he's locked away for many, many years, he all of a sudden becomes second in command. The favor of God was on his life. And we have to sort of extrapolate from that story because we don't always get Joseph's thoughts on what he was feeling in those moments. It's really kind of a bird's eye view of his life. And so we don't know. I'm sure he was feeling all kinds of emotions. But you know what? I think that Joseph had big faith that God was going to come through for him. And that's why I believe he was able to walk through that. That's why God's favor was on his life. Do you have faith that God can give you favor? Do you have that faith? For those of you who play sports, do you have faith that God will give you favor on your sports team? That maybe you might not be the star athlete, but when you get on that field, that God gives you favor, that you make plays that nobody else can make? What other realms are there out there? There's so many realms. Are you in fine arts, in your grades, in classroom, in your friendships? Do you believe that God can give you favor? So that people are attracted to you. So that you have friends. So that you have good influence wherever you go. Do you have faith for that? Maybe you should try applying some faith. Maybe you should activate your faith in that. Are you having faith that God will increase your gifts and talents? We all have gifts. Every single one of you has gifts and talents. You may not think you do. You may not even know what they are. I'm telling you, you have gifts, and they're good gifts. And maybe for some of you, those gifts are lying dormant, and you're not even using them. And I would say, use them. God gave them to you for a reason. But do you have faith that God can increase your gifts and make you better at what he's called you to do? Do you play music? Do you believe that God can increase your talent in that area? Do you have faith that God can make you better in that area? Maybe you should activate your faith a little bit. Here's one. Are you having faith that God can do the impossible in the hearts of people around you? Let me say that one again. Are you having faith that God can do the impossible in the hearts of people around you who don't know him? There's people in our lives. Every one of us has people around us, whether it's friends, whether it's relatives who don't know God. And there's some of those people who, honestly, we think in our minds, there's no way that they're ever going to know God. I mean, there's no way that God would ever be able to get a hold of that person's heart. They are so far gone. They are so disinterested in him. They have their life so set up a different way. There is no way that God's going to break through to them. I have tons of those people in my life. And I was challenged this week. Do I have faith that God can get a hold of their hearts? I don't know if I do. But I need to activate my faith in a whole new way if I don't believe that. Man, I need to activate my faith to believe that God can transform somebody's life who is so far from him that it's almost impossible that they would ever come to know him. Where's my faith? Pastor George always talks, and many of you who've been around here and know Pastor George's story, he'll always say this little tag phrase when it comes to the story of how he came to know God. He always says, if he can save me, he can save anyone. And his point in that is that he was so far from God, so disinterested, his life heading down such a different way, that anybody looking at him on the outside would think, that guy is a lost cause. Maybe God could touch somebody, some other folks, but not this guy. No way. And he says that God got a hold of him. And so his mantra is, hey, if he can save me, he can save anybody. I think that's kind of cool. It activates this faith that even in the most lost type person, that God can still come through. You guys, I think that sometimes we get into a rut and we stop believing for big things. We stop believing that God can do great things in our life. We get in this rut and we kind of go on cruise control and life's going pretty good and maybe we have a little challenge here or there, but we lose big faith. We stop believing for really, really big things. We stop believing that God can do awesome, great, unimaginable things in our lives. And so I'm challenging you today to reverse that. I'm challenging you today to change your mind about that. I'm challenging you to dig in and believe for big things. I've got cousins in my family on my mom's side, okay? And these cousins, I would put in the category of folks that I would think are probably so far gone, it'd be a miracle if God ever got a hold of them. And there's been times throughout my life where I've thought to myself, I should probably pray for their salvation. That's probably a good thing to do. I'm a Christian. Aren't I supposed to do that? And I've said some half-hearted prayers here and there for my cousins. You know, God, would you touch them? Would you save them? Oh, Lord, bring them salvation, Jesus. And I decided, I'm done with that. No, I'm going to believe with a bigger faith for my cousins. And I'm not going to pray just rote words that are just kind of like, you know, whatever. I'm going to pray big faith prayers. God, I believe that my cousin Wesley, that you're going to touch his heart in such a way that you're going to make him feel empty, and that the only thing that's going to fill him is you, and that you're going to make him realize that. And God, that you're going to bring friends around them that are going to touch them in such a way and are going to influence them in such a way that they're going to have to turn to you. I'm believing for that. And God, use me if you can, but if not, use others, use their friends, and bring them to you. I am going to start believing in faith for my cousins. Boy, they're far gone. Boy, they have no interest. And if they ever walked into this church, I would probably pee myself. Like, seriously. But you know what? I kind of want to pee myself. I sort of want them to I sort of want God to do something big, right? Here's what else I'm believing for. There's a lot of things. As I was going through this, I was thinking, man, I need to increase my faith in every single area. Here's another area where I'm increasing my faith. I'm increasing my faith with what God's going to do here at FSM. Here's what I'm believing for. I'm having faith that God's going to make FSM a student ministry where students find and experience God. Here's what that means. That means that when students come in here, whether they've known God for a long time or they don't even know who he is, have never had a relationship with him, that when they come in here, they experience him. I'm believing in faith that that's going to happen every single week here at FSM. I'm believing in faith that we're going to raise up students who love God and love the church and use their talents and their gifts and are active in that. I'm believing in faith for that. I'm believing that God's going to grow FSM spiritually. I'm believing that God will grow FSM numerically. I'm believing in faith for all of that kind of stuff. What are you believing in faith for? What are you believing in faith for in your life? What are you saying, God, this is so big, it's beyond me, and you're going to have to come through on this because without you, there's really no way. Maybe it's a friend who doesn't know God. Maybe it's a family situation. Maybe you have parents who don't know Jesus, and you're thinking there's no way they're ever going to turn their life around. You know what? Activate some big faith. Believe that God can do it. Jesus said this. He said, when you abide in me, when you remain in me, ask whatever you wish, and I will do it. Now, I don't need to give a disclaimer. I don't need to tell you that doesn't mean that if you walk out of here and you say, God, give me $1 million, God, give me a Corvette, that he's obliged to do that. I don't need to tell you that. It's not what Jesus was talking about. The book of James talks about how it says sometimes you don't have things because you don't ask with the right heart. He says you have and you ask and you don't have because you ask with the wrong heart. You ask with the wrong motives. Our motives always need to be right. Our motives always need to be in check. But if we're asking God for something with the right heart, if we're asking him things that are going to be a blessing to others, even if we're asking for things that are going to bless us, why would God not want to give good gifts to his kids? Why would he not want to come through for you? He wants to. And if he doesn't do it right that second, well, he'll do it in the next few days, maybe the next few years. His timing's always the best. But are you taking him up on his offer? Ask whatever you will in my name, and it will be given to you. It's time to activate your faith.